Okay, you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show. The DL Debate's live for you after 7 o'clock this evening. Its host is Brendan Devenny. He's with us now. Hi, Bren. How are you getting on?
Hey, Greg. Good, my man. You?
Good to have you on the show. What a weekend it was for the AVS. Put that success into context for us. We kind of flagged it last Monday, but it was a mixture of a heartbreak for Scunthorpe and Bonkrana, but we'll focus on the good news from the AVS.
Yeah, a huge good. Listen, only third time in history a Donegal side has reached the pinnacle of an All-Ireland title one. And just think of all the great work that's been done in the area at underage, and it's coming through and the effects that it can have on different teams. And there you have a school team with a dream day out, you know, and a very impressive victory, as they've been all season. You know, there was no doubting the winners of this competition. Scunthorpe had gone down by a single point, which is heartbreak for them, but Abbey won 15-9 points, victors over Ashburn Community School. So huge, huge day, Greg, and something, I suppose, you know, with underage, you only have maybe a year, some maybe have two at it, but, you know, it's a very special time to win a competition because it can only happen in that season quite often.
Yeah, okay, so it's a mixed bag for both, but both did very well indeed. Good victory for Donegal in the hurling at the weekend too.
Yeah, a fantastic victory. Listen, also most common sitting in level points. We were going away from home, Rick, so it was by no means a foregone conclusion. And you know, we controlled the game. And I think Mickey McCann, he's in there today, quoted and not being happy because we were in such control. I think they dropped in deep then. We maybe took the foot off the gas and made it a bit more of a stickier game, but we pulled away in the end again. And St. Patrick's Day now, we have London in the park who, they're just sitting behind us. Derry, of course, who were favourites for the league in a week, right? They're sitting top in 7. We're next in 5. London are in 4. So it's a crunch game now with London in the park. So if you're around St. Patrick's Day before the parade in the town, you might call out the hurling support the boys.
What town?
Little Kenny.
Yeah, exactly. There are other towns, Brendan. Do I have to do this with every person that comes on this programme?
The capital.
You'd fight me on that one. Go on. I'm only messing.
Well, that is.
I love Letter.
It's the only place they play.
I love Letter Kenny, and I'm only joking. right, so that's looking backwards and forwards, and also two interesting conversation, I'm sure. By the way, I should mention Cathair O'Kane of the Irish News and Dara Boner of the Donegal News are going to be two of your guests. Two games to go in the league. Of course, Donegal and Derry still in there. It's going to be interesting to hear you guys' views on how all that's going to play out.
Yeah, I'd just like to go through with the guys, you know, in terms of the two squads and the new players that have come in and where they see them at. You had the interest, obviously, the defeat of Dublin recently and what way Mickey Hart's playing it. And there's things happening at club there. There's been rows in the camp and that and Derry and that. So Cahir can bring us up to speed in that as well. And Dara Boner was at the Abbey victory as well. So be interesting to get his views on that and this new wave of players coming through. And when you think about coaching and success to all these guys, like these things breed, you know, potential county footballers. And I suppose if you're from the area or invested in the school, that's great. But from people that are neutral in many ways of just being a Donegal man, you're always looking at these teams and progression, thinking, can there be a top player that springs out of that? So listen, the two lads is going to round that up for us. Connor Garland, who's the vice captain there, or joint captain of Donegal, he's coming on as well to talk to us about our Roscommon game. So we'll be patching everything up between the three lads of what's going on in Donegal. And always interested, Cahir there gives us a good insight into what's happening in Derry. We're always kind of looking across, Greg, weighing up these Derrymen to see what they're going to produce in the championship.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really it now, isn't it? It's hard to believe that you mentioned in passing St. Patrick's Day. That's next weekend. There is the league to be sorted and all that, but it's very hard not to sort of be casting an eye forward to the championship. I don't know at what point sort of the management team feel the team are at heading towards the championship in terms of the building process, but you'll talk about that and other stuff this evening. But it is, you know, it feels like we're just on the brink now of the exciting championship times.
Yeah, it's coming very fast, Greg. I'm not too sure of these seasons around the quickness and the turnaround. There used to be this big break between the league and the championship, and now it just seems like it's bang, bang, bang. I mean, if we make the league final, which looking likely we will, it's 3 weeks to Derry. It's all very close in terms of, I guess, teams peaking and getting right and being ready for championship. And as we've spoken before here, the fact if you did happen to win an Ulster, you're going to do a group stage of championship, there just seems like there's never a let up, whereas other teams can kind of peak at a better time to you. So it's a dangerous thing. But as Jim has highlighted in the interview, Greg, he's going all out for Ulster. And him and Mickey Hart, of course, the previous joisting, is a backstory to this as well, you know, in terms of Jim and his time and how he targeted Mickey Hart's team then, which was Tyrone, of course, and all that as well. So I'm sure between the two managers, there's a big level of competitiveness as well.
What would you be thinking if you were an active player currently, Brendan, about the games coming so thick and fast? Because I think you may be coming at it from a, you know, looking at it in a more nuanced position now as a former player and with, you know, knowing how management works and analysis and all that. If you're a player, is it like, oh my God, are we at it again? Or can the first game in the Ulster Championship not come quick enough?
It's hard to say, Greg. I just wonder about the example maybe of the Glenn players more on the Derry side, how they keep, they were in the final, they're actually in the Ulster semi-final 2 years ago, so they basically have been going maybe 3 years, All-Ireland club finals, and then they've been playing a lot of games, and I know they did get a small rest there the last day, but I'm just mentally and physically, you wonder then when you get to the end of the season, are you buzzing for the big game? I don't know how you keep that up continually, but players will always tell you they prefer playing to training.
Yeah.
So I suppose if you keep the league at a certain level and keep people progressing, you lift it going into the championship. I'd say just because Ulster's got so competitive now, you just wonder how much that might take out of a team. But no one will ever use that excuse, you know, Greg. You just, it just seems a wee bit condensed now at the minute. I don't know, should the pre-season kind of competitions maybe end? It seems like it's a wee bit condensed now, particularly because of Ulster. If it was in another province, I wouldn't be worried about it at all, particularly if it was in Munster or Leinster. I would be quite happy the way things are. So I guess getting that balance is the one you're always wondering about coming for an Ulster team as a group stage of the championship then kicks, you know.
Yeah, of course. And that's what the modern manager has to all consider as well in terms of what you talked about, the league and building to the championship and stuff. Listen, you'll have a great chat with Cathair and Dara and yourself, of course, on the show tonight, this evening. Lots to go through. It's live just after the 7 o'clock news and then available as a podcast for you to listen at your leisure if you're training or out walking or whatever it might be. Brendan, as always, thanks so much for your time. Great to have you on the show. Take care, boss. Thank you. Brendan Devaney, DL Debate. Okay, I'll give a mention here, if you don't mind, to the Community Hero, because there's a lot coming up over March. It's going to be really quite busy. All excited for Friday. Caroline, when is Friday going to be? When are we going to mention what's happening? Is it still a secret? Because, like, it's literally tomorrow, is it? Right, so Friday we have a big fundraising day. It's celebrating Highland Radio's birthday, and we're hopefully going to be able to give real great financial support to three brilliant charities. And Friday's going to be a bit of fun. And, you know, we've got lots of different voices. Well, I can't say anything since it's going to be launched tomorrow. But anyway, it's just going to be good fun, right? So hopefully you'll be with us for that. But also what we have to wrap up by the 18th of March is our Community Hero Award. Now, where it's simple, we're just asking any of you out there, if you want to recognise someone in your community that goes above and beyond, that helps the community, there could be a carer, a volunteer. We've been talking so much about carers, right, over the last weekend and in the weeks in advance of that. We know how important carers are, right? Or a volunteer. How about recognising them? So we're going to, from all of your entries, select five community heroes for 2024. Highland Radio's Community Heroes, five of them. And as a token of thanks and recognition of the work, we have €1,000 each for them. Now, you can nominate someone you believe is a hero in your community by emailing their name, address, and the reason why, and your contact details to hero@highlandradio.com, or post your nominations to Highland Radio Mountaintop Letterkenny if you prefer to do that. You don't have to write a big splurge, but you feel free to do so if you wish, but I don't want to discourage anyone who goes, oh, I don't want to write an awful lot of things out. It could be, look, it's Greg because he does this and because he does that, and this is why, that's it, nothing else, right? I'm not suggesting you, anyway, you know what I mean. Just giving an example. So the closing date for entries is the 18th of March, and you can visit highlandradio.com for more info there. So the more nominations we get, the better. So we really hope, already we've had tons of nominations and we want more. And as Joe Dolan would say, more and more and more. I would like to thank Michael McBride for being the only politician to stand up for the people regarding the closure of the health centres. Where are the other representatives from the Kilmacrenan area? I think he did himself mention that I think he did mention himself that Donald Kelly had made representations on that as well. The public are never allowed general access to account centre. In Aintu, we applied in advance and were allowed 5 passes. Anyone wishing to attend must apply in advance to the court office. That comes in from Mary T. Sweeney, who is the Aintu rep there. Okay, thank you for that. Good morning, Greg. Given the outcome of the referendums and the fallout from it, the disconnect from all in government is offensive to the people. The mindset of we need to find out where it went wrong shows that in abundance, and unfortunately, things won't change given the main opposition parties seem to be of the same mindset. Gary, thank you for that. Another, the government blatantly lied to try and get a yes vote, saying a woman's place is in the home. Wording, which is not in the constitution. They're supposed to work for the people. They are not working for the people. We need to clear out all the politicians and have people in politics who are not so impeded in moral corruption. Senator Lisa Chambers voted no. Why is there no mention of her? Well, you only found out after the fact. And I presume if we'd invited... I can't presume that, but... Senator Lisa Chambers could have advocated a no-no ahead of the referendum. We could have spoke to her there. She's a regular guest on this show. I don't know. She has voted no-no. Lots of people in the government parties voted no-no too, I'm sure. Let us hope that the woke rocket has finally run out of fuel and is now falling back to earth. That comes in from Brian. Now is the time to start the no campaign to the euthanasia referendum. Let's show the government we will not be led by the EU. That's very early doors, but I suppose that's why the caller let's start now. The cheek of the government to say that basically we were all stupid who voted no, that the government didn't manage to convince us all to vote their way. They might be better to take note that they were well enough educated to make our own informed decisions now and going forward. Leo Varadkar said on Saturday evening they lost because of misinformation on the no side. That's the planet he's living on. I don't think that's true at all. Listen, if you wanted to highlight elements that tried scare tactics, you know, unfortunately, fear is how some people try and influence others. There certainly was an element of the fear factor, i.e. this is what this means and this is what could happen. I don't think that was the loudest voice in the room at all. I think the no-no arguments that I heard, now I'm not saying the fear arguments weren't accurate, that's not my point, but I thought the no-no was... The concerns that they highlighted were articulated very well and easily backed up as well, because those questions that were being raised were put to people advocating a yes on TV, including Micheál Martin, who struggled to answer what are basic questions, and I think basic questions that people might have when voting. Many people were not well informed. Who told you that? You are on a different planet. Why are the government kept in for 4 years? This is too long. Could they half the time and the government could do their job more efficiently? The average cost for a modular home is €400,000, says the listener. This is a prefab. Mica families would be looking for this price too. This is a complete disregard for public finances. A modular home, $400,000, I suppose it depends on its size. You can get a modular home for, remarkably, on Amazon. I saw them for $28,000. But it's obviously not a forever home when I quote that. Who are the opposition party that we vote for? It won't be Sinn Féin anyway, as they are the new Fianna Fáil. That's what one listener believes. It'll be very interesting to see the next opinion polls. We still have dozens of comments on that issue. I'm working through them because I really value your effort in sending them in to us. Now, the president of the Irish Association of Plastic Surgeons has warned of a risk to members of the public and said he is shocked and stunned after viewing undercover footage of the activities of some people working in the beauty industry in Ireland. During a 6-month investigation, RTE Investigates found individuals and businesses handling, selling and prepared to inject Botox-type products illegally. Many used unlicensed products, often imported from South Korea. Dr. Farah Maiden is a GP and aesthetics consultant and joins us on the programme now. Dr. Farah, thank you so much for your time today. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you keeping? You're good?
I'm good, yeah. Excellent. I'm good. Just good. Took an hour out to come out here and have a chat with you guys. Yeah.
Lovely
so thanks
stuff.
For having me.
So when we talk about, you know, the consequences and implications of using unlicensed product, how does that look like? Like, where are we going to get it, and how is that whole sort of area where it's working illegally operating, I wonder?
Yeah, so with Botox is actually a brand of botulinum toxin, and that's what we use for anti-wrinkle injections. Now, since it has been rebranded to Vistabel, so there are other licensed botulinum toxins such as Azelia, etc. But so these are licensed for use in Ireland by dentists or doctors. But you get, you know, you get emails and spam emails and, you know, people selling botulinum toxin from South Korea, from China. And they're often named Botulax. There's lots of different types of it. And all you do is, you know, you click and purchase and you get it to your door. Now, thankfully, the HPRA have been up in their antics and they have been, you know, stopping them at the border. So these get confiscated. But like, Greg, you could go online and search up buy Botox online and you'd be able to buy some, maybe get it sent to Newry or the UK, really anywhere. Across the border and get it collected with no issues. Now, there's a lot of issues with that because botulinum toxin has to be stored at a certain temperature as well. So it has to be regulated, temperature controlled. So if you're going outside of the controlled suppliers, you know, you cannot guarantee the effects of it. So that's where it lies. It is scary how broadly available it is.
And Farah, are many people ordering it online and self-administering it?
I would say there would be a lot, you know. Like, I've been doing this for 10 years now, and when I first started practicing aesthetics, there was a whole rigmarole about trying to get a prescription for it. You'd have to be properly trained, etc., to be able to buy Botox. And you know, Botox is expensive to buy. So if you're paying a premium price, you're likely to be getting the right produce, you know. But quite often there are deals on, as in, you know, you buy two areas, you get third free, you get, you know, half price Botox, all these kind of things are out there. And, you know, it's kind of tricking people to believing that there is an offer on. Like, treating a certain area of toxin, say if we're treating your forehead, you need X amount of toxin to treat your forehead. So you cannot actually reduce the price of it for you to have a business out of it, if that makes sense. So by halving the price, you're still using the same amount of Botox. So if you're using the right stuff, you're making zero money. In fact, you're losing money. So that's where it lies. You know, it's like the whole thing about social media, and everyone's kind of going towards this flawless, filtered look and, you know, putting pressure on people to get these anti-aging treatments when there's no need for them necessarily.
Yeah, a lot of what we are seeing is younger people who probably, you know, don't actually need these types of treatments. I mean, are they going into some of these more less reputable places and being said, you don't need this yet? This is maybe, you know, to stay off the signs of aging or to some extent reverse it. You know, but when there's so much money involved and it seems light touch regulation, it's inevitable that people are going to play fast and loose with the rules, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's particularly worse since COVID because everything was shut down. And there are several companies in the UK that would train anybody to inject Botox. And it's a day or 2 day course and you get a certificate and then they will hook you up with insurance. And I'm not sure where they're getting the suppliers from, do you know? And that has to be prescribed as well. So there's a whole big gray area here. And I know I have a couple of people coming to me after getting cheap fillers done from other areas, right? Okay. And they get fillers under the eyes, in their lips. And I can tell you that it is horrific, you know, having to reverse these products when they've been in someone's body for quite a while. you know, and that kind of causes like quite a significant negative impact on this person, you know, and this person that never really needed those treatments in the first place, having to endure all of that time with the complications and getting it reversed as well, you know.
So if it is appropriate and people want to get these types of treatments, be it Botox or fillers or what have you, like, is there a, you know, a register of people with the level of qualification and training that you have, for an example? So how could I find you versus someone who's, you know, diversifying from hairdressing and has decided to do this also as well and has sourced the product and done the signage, you know, and is wearing a mask and looks like a doctor, so all's good. Do you know what I mean? So how do we, how can the public, people are going to seek this out, right? So there's no point saying don't do it. So how can we be discerning?
So in Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, only dentists and doctors are allowed to inject botulinum toxin. So any doctors, any doctor or dentist are on the register. So I'm on the Irish Medical Council register. So they'd be able to go onto their website, put in my name and see if I'm registered in the medical council. And that will confirm that I am. And, you know, you're pretty much in safe hands, you know, whereas so a beautician wouldn't have, a beautician, for example, like a hairdresser, you were saying is diversifying, they wouldn't have said register, so they're not regulated with that. So it's impossible to confirm.
Is it illegal for them to administer this, though, as well, too? Because whilst we talk there being a register there, you know, is there any crackdown on those that are doing it off the register? What's the what are the regulations in that regard?
Yeah, so according to the HPRA, it is illegal for anyone that is not a doctor or a dentist to inject Botox in the Republic of Ireland. They may be okay to inject it in Northern Ireland or the UK, but they're not allowed to do it in the Republic of Ireland. And the HPRA are clamping down a little bit, and I know that, you know, there are certain clinics, the Garrods have been involved and things like that to help kind of shut it down. To just keep the members of public safe, essentially.
So what are the consequences for this being done wrong, then? What kind of impact can it have on the person if, you know, fillers or Botox? I think they're two separate things, aren't they? What are the nightmare cases?
The nightmare case, to see, Botox is a temporary product anyway. So generally, the worst that could happen is if you're injecting it into the wrong area, you might have a dropped eyelid, which will resolve itself anyway. And, you know, so you might get displeasing cosmetic outcomes from botulinum toxin. However, fillers have detrimental side effects. So fillers are, you know, they're an excellent product, but they have to be injected by a trained practitioner. Fillers can cause necrosis of the skin, or that means your tissue can die if it blocks a vessel when you inject it. So knowing what the product is it dissolvable, the degree of thickness that it has, because some products aren't as easy to dissolve as others. So there is an antidote that you can get, hyaluronidase, and that can be only be injected by a medical professional, you know. So if you're in trouble, you get fillers, you see the alarm signs. First of all, are they able to recognize the early signs of necrosis, or if you're blocked a vessel, you know, that needs to be, you know, said as well. Like, you need to be able to identify it before you can treat it. So, and the worst thing with dermal fillers is that if it's injected into the arteries that supply the eyes, that could lead to blindness. Is a whole different ballgame.
So I listen, I really don't judge people. People can do whatever they want, you know, with themselves. I just hope people stay safe and what have you. So this is not hope. I'm not being nasty in saying this, right? But in terms of fillers, you know, particularly in the lips and up around the eyes and cheekbone area, okay? It's obvious when, it seems to me it's obvious when it's been done, right? Is that a reality or can it be done in a way where it's not so obvious? I mean, you can see it a mile off, you know, a lot of people that have it done. Is that the outcome to expect, or has someone gone OTT?
It's definitely not the outcome that you'd want to expect. you can, people know since fillers when it's done, you know, not quite right. So you're not, you know, you don't want it to be obvious. So fillers, the role of fillers is really to replace loss of volume. Now, for anti-aging, fillers are not the answer all the time, because you do need to have, you know, you need to improve skin quality, your skin health. So there are other skin tightening treatments that should be done before fillers are considered, in my opinion. Otherwise, you need quite a lot of filler to fill in the space to try and tighten the skin, which just doesn't work. So when you overfill someone, it just doesn't look good. It doesn't look natural, and it's displeasing to the eye. So it kind of, you know, kind of, it's not a good look, basically. Mm. But yeah, no, you should not notice.
But in a way, I think to some extent, the exaggerated fillers has actually become a look in and of itself, right? Because if you watch a lot of Love Island or shows like that, right, it is clear that it's been slightly overdone, if I could put it like that there. And that almost becomes a norm, because then you get regular folk, mostly women, aspire to look like that, but it's not actually a representation of the natural look of a human face, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. You know, and that is something that you have to be careful with. And, you know, for me, if somebody does not need filler, I just don't treat them. You know, I can educate them. I can explain why I'm not doing it and what they need instead, if anything at all. But no, I just wouldn't treat that. Like the overfilled, exaggerated looks, like you said, is not your normal anatomy. So why change it to suit, you know, to suit what social media expectations on it? That's just the way I kind of run my business, and I've always been.
But that works for you too, because, you know, that means you get a reputation of, you get more footfall because you get the reputation of not pumping stuff into someone for profits, and that works in, you know, presumably in the people you say, look, you don't really need this product, that benefits you because it, you know, it improves your reputation, of course. So it's all very, very fascinating. I do appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Dr. Farah Maiden. It's been lovely chatting to you.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye. Take care. Have a lovely day. Dr. Farah Maiden, she's a GP and an aesthetics consultant. Any views on that? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Where would I begin with the comments? So many comments coming in on various issues, particularly a big pushback against the suggestion that we voted no, and I want to say we, I don't mean me, I mean we as a county, we as a region voted no, because we didn't really know. People don't like that suggestion. I read that story and can't believe what that poor guard went through for doing a good deed for a member of the public. The stress that poor man and his family were put through is unbelievable. Indeed, that's the guard that gave the bite to the older gentleman. My dear God, discipline for a garda who helped an old person, but none for the failings of the handling of the garda that harassed the whistleblowers. There are so many examples of different approaches in different situations. No one could put a counter argument to that listener's comment there, because, you know, any right-minded individual would probably see it the same. Okay, so Hugo on Facebook says the Irish people are beginning to wake up to what's going on in this country. Hugo, the Irish people have always been awake, and they pick and choose. You know, I don't think there's any mass awakening here. I think we as a people are very clever. So some of the issues we've been discussing, the fallout from the referendums, but there's been other issues too which have been highlighted. Carmel's going to help us highlight one of them as well. Hi, Carmel.
Hello.
Whilst lots and lots of people came out and voted no, you're saying those that wanted to vote either yes or no were unable to do so, and you've got your own experience of that.
Yes. On Friday, I collected my mother, who's 87, and brought her to her local polling station. And we arrived, and first of all, she had no polling card. And I said, Mommy, they'll not let you vote without a polling card. And she says, of course they will. They just take your name and away you go.
She's right there, yep.
So I said, well, you better have ID with you. So she collected her ID and off we went. And we went to the polling station and she gave her name and they couldn't find her on the register. And our polling station happens to have two registers for two different areas. And she wasn't on either register. And they faffed about and they thought, oh, I don't understand this. And eventually telephone calls were made. At this point, I had my mother seated in the polling station. She was greeting all the neighbours. They were calling her by name. They were saying, oh, Bridget, haven't seen you for ages, you know. And between one thing and another, multiple telephone calls were made, and she was told that she had been registered as deceased in 2021.
My word.
So she couldn't vote.
And this is us last week talking to people that there's no easy way to actually get yourself off the register or get a loved one off the register if they are deceased. So your mother's sitting there healthy and hearty chatting to the neighbours,
yes,
to be told only that she, according to the register, passed away in 2021?
Yes. And then we were told that it was an administrative error.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's not an error. That's a decision somebody made. They didn't decide that she had moved to a different area,
mm-hmm,
and transferred her vote elsewhere. Somebody had sat somewhere and clicked a button and said, oh, deceased.
What was her reaction?
Well, initially we both laughed and I said, well, clearly here she is. And we laughed, but eventually it kind of sunk in very... I kind of almost got emotional thinking, no, this is really weird.
Mm-hmm.
This is just not on. So multiple calls were made. We were given a telephone number to contact the county council. When we phoned that number three times, it went to voicemail. It was some sort of a voice box or like a mailbox. So we could get no answer there. Eventually, they did speak to somebody, and we were told that a form would be left. It could be posted out, and I said, well, that's no good to us today. Can we collect the form? So we were able to collect a form at Lifford in the county house, and I asked to see the person who left the form down at the front desk. My mother started filling out the form. She said, oh, I have to go to the Garda station now and get this signed. So eventually, the person who left the form at the front desk didn't meet us, but sent someone else in their place. Now, we got an apology. We got a very laughing apology, saying it's just a human error, it's an administrative thing.
Mm.
Well, when I said it wasn't an administrative error, like somebody had done this, and they said, well, it's a human error, I'm really sorry. The only thing I can't do, I can apologise, but the only thing I can't do is let you vote today.
Now, your mother, over her 87 years, has seen a lot of change, and she was looking to exercise her constitutional right on what was International Women's Day.
Yes.
You both went to a lot of effort to try and allow her to exercise that right. That can't be undone. She didn't get to have her say on something I imagine was quite important to her.
Exactly. I mean, if it had happened to me, maybe I wouldn't have been as infuriated, but I was absolutely raging on behalf of my mother because she knows the value of a woman's vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the value of a woman's vote. Unfortunately, I haven't always voted. I haven't always been registered. But in my mother's case, she would never... We were told initially that she should have checked the e-register. And I thought, no, my mother would not have been capable of checking an e-register. However, there's plenty in our family that could have.
Yes.
But there was no reason for us to believe that she would need to be checked to see would she still be on the register.
Yeah, because she was removed from the register. Exactly. I received polling cards to my house that I couldn't get them to the people. I don't know who they are. Other people said they didn't receive polling cards and turned up with ID, and like your mum, weren't able to vote. It's a mess. And it comes around every single time there's an election or there is a vote. It exposes the mess of the electoral register, but nothing seems to be ever done to actually fix it.
Mm.
I'm sorry for your mum and that she didn't get to exercise her right, her hard-fought right as well, particularly in the context of the constitutions. But, Carmel, thank you very much for helping us to highlight it. And pass on my best wishes to your mum, if you don't mind.
Thank you. I hope this doesn't happen to other senior citizens, because they won't have the ability to check e-registers.
Yeah, agreed. I agree. Thanks, Carmel.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. Now, a caller says, Greg, may I ask, and they ask so politely, may I ask if you might manage to have a short interview with Sister Breege McKenna, leading a retreat in Creasler today, Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday? Well, we are ahead of the game here because Sister Breege McKenna will be a guest on the show tomorrow, just after, at the start of the show, effectively, at around about 20 past nine. So she's going to be in studio with us having a chat. So if you have any questions or comments for Sister Breege McKenna, a popular lady, of course, get them into us now and we'll carry them over. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. Good morning, Greg. I think the people voted to show the government what we are sick of. Them, maybe. Now, Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin will see that at the end of the day, it's the people power. It's not what they want, it's what the people want. Greg, that man says exactly what I'm thinking, and presume this is Michael. No one stands up for ordinary working class people. Another, what's all the fuss about? A low poll. The abortion referendum was passed on a low poll. There was no complaints. Leo should stand down as leader. This cost the taxpayer $22 million. Morning, Greg. The Irish people gave their answer to government with the no-no vote. It's time now for a general election ASAP. Leo needs to step down. He's failed in his job along with the rest of the other parties. People have had enough of lies and nothing but lies from them. A note to the hotel down the country that was supposed to be, it was announced as dual purpose. It's now been confirmed that it's not dual purpose. That kind of slipped under the radar a little bit. And also, too, this money that was supposed to go to counties that have taken lots of migrants. Do you remember they announced a multi-million euro package to support counties where that have taken up in more migrants and refugees than other countries? I wonder, has a penny of that money arrived in Donegal yet, and where did it go? You see, we hear these announcements and it's welcomed and there's press conferences and all that kind of stuff. But where did that money go? Did Donegal get any of it? Who got it? What's it been spent on? If any of you out there know, 086 60 25,000, you know, it's time we write things down and then follow them up. That's what I try and do here. Right, okay. We highlighted, in fact, we broke the story of the blood room at Letterkenny University Hospital. There were appeals for more space. They needed more space to get through tissue and blood samples. They had made suggestions. The management had made suggestions to the management of the hospital how this could be achieved. They made representations to the HSC at meeting level. All their suggestions were rejected, and effectively there was no solution found. This meant that they had to tell GPs and consultants that there's not a guarantee that we'll turn around tests in the same day. If you don't turn around the tests in the same day, that means the test then is invalidated because the source material is no longer fit to be tested. Michelle joins us on the programme now. Michelle, this is an example really of a crazy situation, because the management were clear. This isn't about equipment, or this isn't about staff or funding. This is about literal space. And what's your view on this story, and suppose how it sort of feeds into other health stories that we've heard?
I think it's completely unreasonable. Like, it's completely unfair. And everyone is really angry. Like, you know, we have one hospital in Donegal, like Letterkenny. Like, our patients have to go to Galway, Dublin. Everything's going out. Can we not do our own bloods? Because this is going to cost a whole... Could be mistakes made, like when smear tests were outsourced to America. We know what happened. And this was bound to be known before it actually came out. And was there not complete compliance to building more space, like, when we have the people to do it? Like, it just seems so bad.
Because the HSE says that they are reviewing options to address the workload pressure. But what they're saying in the interim, and this is where the concerns come from, that in the meantime, they are going to outsource tests. And as you say, and if you said, well, that was a big problem with the smear test, can we have... And I'm not saying we can't have faith in the results of these tests, but there's enough there that people are going to be concerned, because no one wants a false negative on a cancer diagnosis, for an example, or as part of their treatment.
Yeah, like, I mean, we have cancer patients here. The patients already have to go away. Why does their bloods have to go away? Like, it should not even be an option. The obvious thing should be put in place for us to have it in Letterkenny. No, like, I mean, it's going to, you know what I mean? You know, it's just about floor space. Hello? Mm. Like, you know, it's it just seems unacceptable because bloods have to be done straight away. So, yeah. You know, Greg, the cost of outsourcing, the cost, the 24 hours that's available sometimes for some bloods mm-hmm. for diagnosis, not immediate diagnosis, bloods have to be ruled on again. Like the hassle and the cost of it, can that not outweigh?
Yeah, Michelle, you talked about the cancer side of it too. Like I've spoken to people off air who have certain aspects of their blood monitored, to determine whether or not they need to go on for further treatment or if things are in abeyance, if you know what I mean. I'm not phrasing that correctly, but there then becomes a distrust of that information. So if you're told your such and such levels are okay, can you be fully confident that that's the case, when it could put another 3 or 4 months, it could delay, you know what I mean? Like you can see why the distrust is there. It's the problems, Michelle.
Yeah, like, I mean, if this is let happen, like, what's the point in having a hospital, having a lab? You know, at the moment, we have to stand up for patients that already have to travel. So now they could get, our bloods can't be done here, like our own bloods from our own county.
Yeah, okay.
Like, it just needs
Okay, Michelle, listen, great points well made. Thank you for your time and me struggling to articulate. I'm trying to be careful with the language in that, not to identify anyone or anything, but the point being is that, with the concerns over the turnaround times, not being able to get through them all, and now outsourcing, there are some people now that are wondering, is the good results, say, for an example, they got back the right results, and conversely, if they got bad results, are they the right results? You know yourself, when there's uncertainty, especially when matters of health, it's very, very difficult for the patient. I had to get my name removed from the register as I was getting jury letters to attend court. This upset me as I suffer from mental illness. I didn't want to give up my right to vote, but I had no choice. She didn't need to remove her name, by the way. There are other ways of doing it, but this person thought that the best way to stop getting jury letters, which I've never received one, was to have her name removed from the electoral register. Okay, John is with us now. Hi, John. Hello, John, can you hear me? We're talking about taxi drivers, John. Are you there? No, that line is going to have to be reconnected, folks. The number's there, Shannon, if you need to grab that. Morning, Greg. The Irish people gave their answer to government with the no-no vote. It's time now for a general election, says another listener. Sinn Féin's support off and inaction in this referendum has cost them the general election, believes a listener. NWCI women said, etc., are overfunded and do not represent women, but they do represent the woke radical feminists who believe most men are abusers and that women are superior and not equal to men. They are so extreme that they support male abusers who use parental alienation against children and mothers and grandmothers by ignoring this abuse because more men are affected by it. They also support the rights of men over women to identify as a woman so as to abuse the right status and respect for women in Ireland. But women have different views on those issues, but I take your point. Hi, John, you there now?
Yeah, John, here speaking, yeah.
Yes, John, right. Now, you're calling out at least one or two taxi drivers that you've observed. What's going on?
Two taxi drivers I observed. One about 5 months ago, it happened outside the Japanston earlier. I was turning right to head on for, as we call it, across by the bus area there, And there's two or three spaces you have to wait to get up to get onto the one to turn right. And I was 3 or 4 cars in front of me, and I didn't get turning in. And there was a taxi about 3 or 4 cars behind me, and it just swerved out and passed us. When I was ready to cut in, he just more or less nosed me off the road.
Wow. So he cut up the inside to turn right himself.
Yeah, and it was at least 4 or 5 cars too soon.
Right.
Because there was a space, if you wanted to turn onto the right, to go onto the Chapel car park.
Mm-hmm.
That happened to me about 5 or 6 months ago. And last night, I was taking my mother-in-law up to Bingo at Jackson's Hotel in Balbuffet around about 7:30 or 7:28 and around that time of night. And I approached McKay's corner, and the lights was red. And there was 3 or 4 cars in front of me.
Yeah.
And I waited till the lights turned green. And there was a taxi on the left-hand side of me. Should have been dropped off a passenger or whatever you want to call him, left it, and I seen him getting out of the taxi, and the taxi, as soon as he got up as far as the lights, just cut straight down in front of me and headed for Balbuffet, which should have been going to call it down by St. Joseph's.
From the left lane, he cut across. So what did you do? Did you did you challenge the driver? Did you ring the taxi company? Which we won't mention at this point, if that's okay,
I blew the horn. I held my hand the horn for about a couple of seconds. He stuck on the hazard lights. He drove down as far as we call John Doe's Cafe with the hazard lights on. And I followed him over the town. And he cut in. He turned in. I parked up in front of Cheers Pub in Balbuffet. And I got out because the blood was boiling in me.
Right.
And I went up and opened up. There was two passengers got into the vehicle. And I went up and I opened the door. And I says, what the so-and-so were you at McClay's Corner?
Mm-hmm.
I says, why? I says, absolutely, 100%, you done in the wrong. You cut across the inside lane in front of me and you headed over the town. And he sort of laughed at me. Mm-hmm. And I says, like, get about accidents on the road. A man should have been going left, cut straight in front of me on the right-hand side and headed over the town. What were you at? He says, we have a company to run. And started to laugh at me and sort of drove off.
Wow,
and me trying to speak to him on the passenger door.
Mm. Okay, so you don't go, satisfaction there?
No. And I phoned up the taxi, I got the number off the taxi, off the back of the taxi bus, and I actually got the number plate.
Mm.
And I phoned up the taxi crowd last night, and obviously the office was closed because it was 7:30 or and around 7:28 time of night. And I phoned this morning there again. And I got a worker, and he says, all we can do is, he says, I'll report it to my boss man,
well,
and he says, I'll ring you back in an hour. So
at least they heard you. Said, all right. Well, listen, let us know what happens with the callback, John. I appreciate your time today. Is that something you've experienced out there? 08660 25000. Right, that's where we have to leave it on today's 9 till noon show. Thank you so much to all of you who listened to the show, who watched the programme, who messaged, texted in, called in. We still have a couple of dozen of comments that I just literally haven't had the time to get to as of yet. We'll return to some of them tomorrow, of course. Have a great Monday, everyone.